puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, I think I have a little bit of an idea where we're going today on Abandoned Manitoba with our guide, Gordon Goldsborough of the Manitoba Historical Society. Gordon, when you were leaving last week, you said something to do with a site near Verdun, to do with early farmer engagement in politics. What were you getting at there?
That's right. I was referring to the Scallion House, which is located about 2.5 miles northwest of Verdun. The Scallion House was so named because it was occupied by four members of the Scallion family, James and Thomas Scallion, along with their sisters, Catherine and Hannah Scallion. In other words, four siblings, none of whom married ever, lived in this house. And just outside of Verdun, it was a dramatic house, and it's still standing there today.
Tell us about the house.
Well, the Scallions arrived in Canada from Ireland in the 1850s, and initially they lived in Ontario. They came to Manitoba in 1882, and they initially homesteaded at Stonewall. But the next year, in 1883, they moved to the Verdun area, which at the time was just developing. The railway was moving westward, and they could establish a farm. They actually had quite a bit of resources. In fact, compared to many of the other farmers that were arriving in Manitoba, the Scallions were able to have a farm of 960 acres, which is a remarkable number. I mean, most farmers, 160 was considered a reasonable farm.
Yeah, like a section. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for them to have 960 was remarkable. Mm-hmm. They built a home, I guess it was next to the property, the farmland, and it was itself a dramatic structure. In fact, people from around that area used to take people, visitors, to the Scallion farm to impress them. If they wanted to show people, you know, the opportunities that existed in the Verdun area, they just had to look at the Scallion place and see, well, this is what a successful farmer can do here, and I'm going to settle here too. So it was obviously a very dramatic and impressive building.
What was so special about it?
Well, it was stone. I mean, and that's why, you know, over 130 years later, it's still there. It was built from stone. There was a house, a two-story house made out of fieldstone. And it was an interesting construction technique. We've talked about other buildings built in the same way before.
Yes.
Where they would take a large round fieldstone, split it in half, and that way you'd get two rocks with a flat side.
Yes.
You'd turn those opposite each other, so you'd have flat sides facing out and facing in. You'd have a space in the middle, of course, where the round sides of the rocks would touch, and you'd fill that with rubble. So that it would make a very thick, very solid rock wall. So the house was a two-story structure of these field stones, and then nearby they built a granary. And the granary is even better condition than the house. It's a sort of a squat one-story building. It's got a wooden roof. And then on one side, on the east side of it, it's got sort of a soil berm that runs up to the top of the stone wall, up to the wooden part of the granary. And I suspect, I don't know for sure, but my suspicion is that that was probably a ramp that they would use to bring grain up to so they could load it into the granary. And this is where they would store the grain coming in from their fields. And they say the granary is in remarkable condition. Unfortunately, the house itself is not. It looks almost like a dollhouse, in fact. You know those dollhouses where you see have one wall that falls away and you can kind of see all the rooms? Well, that's kind of what happened to the Scallion House. There's one wall missing. The north wall is gone. It's collapsed. And so you can see right into the house. You can see all the bedrooms upstairs. You can see the kitchen and the main room on the main floor. There's a number of big cracks in it. So I wouldn't be at all surprised that in the not too distant future, that house will come tumbling down. But the granary looks solid. And that's good because I think it symbolically is an important sign of agriculture in Manitoba. And so the reason I brought it to attention today is that it's an interesting building in itself. But I think what's even more interesting is that it was occupied by the Scallions because they, in fact, James Scallion in particular, have a very prominent place in Manitoba history.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me about the link to that.
Okay, well, the granary, of course, implies agriculture, and James and Thomas Scallion were farmers. But James was also politically active. And I think partly because he was incensed with the kind of treatment that farmers were facing around this time. This was around the turn of the 20th century. They had a lot of complaints because they felt, and I think with some cause, that the grain companies that were taking their grain were not giving them a fair treatment, that they were charging them what they called dockage fees, basically fees to receive their grain and load it into boxcars. The prices that they were paid, the farmers, for their grain was not what the farmers felt was fair. The railway companies assessed a large fee for transportation of the grain. And the farmers, I think, collectively felt that they were really getting a poor deal. So at the turn of the 20th century, Scallion, I think, was starting to get politically engaged. And in fact, in January of 1903, he and a bunch of local farmers from the Verdun area formed what they call the Verdun Grain Growers Association. And Scallion was its president. And he, in fact, started traveling around Manitoba, encouraging other communities to follow Verdun's lead. So, in fact, in March of 1903, 2 months later, they all met in Brandon and they formed what was called the Manitoba Grain Growers Association. And again, James Scallion was its president. And so the idea was to advocate on the behalf of farmers. Well, 3 years later, 1906, they formed something called the Grain Growers Grain Company. And the idea was then that this would be an alternative to the private companies that were selling grain, that then, in fact, if you were a member of this Grain Growers Grain Company, you were a farmer, you could essentially sell your produce to the grain company and they would give you a fair deal. Well, this was the beginnings of the farmer cooperative movement. It eventually morphed into United Grain Growers, which, of course, was a major grain company throughout the 20th century. It's only in the last few years that it's kind of disappeared from the collective mind. But they did all kinds of other things as well. They got into publishing. They published something called the Grain Growers Guide, and it eventually became the Country Guide, you know, which, of course, was a very influential farm paper. You know, so this little movement was quite influential in agriculture. Well, but they also went further. So in 1920, this Manitoba Grain Growers Association changed its name. It changed to the United Farmers of Manitoba. And they decided that really the only way to get any kind of real progress for farmers was to get politically active. And so they began fielding candidates in elections. In 1921, the year after they were formed, they fielded federal candidates in the federal election. In 1922, under the banner of the Progressive Party of Manitoba, not, by the way, linked to the Progressive Conservative Party of today, it was different roots, the Progressive Party, they actually ran provincially and won. They formed the government in Manitoba. They formed what they called a farmers' government. And what they did was they recruited the principal of the Agricultural College here in Winnipeg to serve as the leader, a fellow named John Bracken.
Ah.
Bracken.
Okay.
Bracken went on to become, in fact, Manitoba's longest serving premier for 21 years. So it was, in effect, thanks to James Scallion that this movement got underway.
Wow.
And it led, in fact, to, you know, much of the political system we've had through much of the 20th century. And it all harkens back to this little facility just northwest of Verdun.
What a tale. So much history embedded in the story today. Well done, Gordon.
You're welcome, Terry.
Have you got your plans for your next one?
I do indeed. Next week, we're going to visit an abandoned company town that is located in the Whiteshell Provincial Forest.
Okay. I'm intrigued. Thank you, Gordon. Always great. See you next week. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.